Welcome to 773 Sports. I'm Joe Kilgown. With me, as always, Herb Lawrence from 670 The Score. I'm a comedian, travels across the country. If you're checking out the podcast for the very first time, welcome. We cover all things Chicago sports, have a little fun along the way, and we also offer solutions. We don't just bitch and complain about what our teams are doing wrong. We tell them what they should be doing right and to follow us because we're smarter than everyone. Right, Herb?
That is correct. I mean, that's why you're listening to this podcast right now.
Damn straight, man. I hope you had a good Christmas. Happy New Year to you, buddy.
Yeah, I did. I spent some time with my family and my girlfriend Courtney's family also, good people. And it was a nice time to get away from work for a little bit. I didn't take, like, extended period off, but, you know, a little bit off, like 2-3 days off. It's just what you need to recharge and not go away for too long. So when you come back, you feel like, oh, God, this is terrible. All that time off was great.
Exactly. I feel the same. I had a lot of fun with the family. You know, I got the two little ones and they had a good Christmas and all that. A lot of toys still strewn about, stepping on them and all that. But it's fun. I'm having a good time. He's got some Batman toys. He got some really cool, we got Iron Man. Got a cool Iron Man toy. So I'm having some fun with that stuff.
Yeah. And I can't complain. Your oldest is the one, like, he can, like, he's like cognizant of what Christmas is. Does your youngest one know of Christmas? You know, does he know, like, what's going on?
No, he recently turned 8 months old, so he's just happy for everything. Everything's a great time to him, you know? He's a good lad. So, yeah, man, it was weird, though, having the holidays in the middle of the week like that. That always throws me off a little bit because it feels like a weekend for a long time. Luckily, I'm a comedian, and I don't have a real job, so it doesn't affect me too much. But, dude, we had football over the weekend, and let me ask you this, Herb. Deshaun Watson, how did he play? How did he play over the weekend?
Well, initially, he played like trash.
And that is then true.
He put on the Superman cape and started to do the things that he was drafted for. Amazing game. I can't believe how great he looked at the end of that game. I mean, the escaping that sack with two guys having him in dead to rights, I can't believe it still. I look back at him like, how did he not go down either of the times and then have the wherewithal to dump it off to his running back and then do the rest? It was like amazing. Every time I look at him and, of course, Patrick Mahomes, I can't help to think about our quarterback we have here.
Well, that's what I was getting at. I was going to ask you, if you're a Houston Texans fan, at the end of that game, are you not even more optimistic about Watson going forward?
I mean, you can't be anything but happy because his performances before this one in the playoffs, I think he had one more game before this, not great. And it seemed like it was going to continue in the first half. The Bills had him locked down. He was missing open receivers. It seemed like he was missing Will Fuller more than he was letting on. And then, you know, the sack by J.J. Watt pretty much ignited the whole team. They're like, all right, this guy who had surgery and was supposed to be out for the rest of the year comes in and does this, the rest of us able-bodied people should be able to give maximum effort to. And then that's what they did. So, yeah, people in Houston feel good about that team because the quarterback is a real guy. He's a real, real quarterback, and he's bailing out his guy, his coach.
He did. That's a good call, too. He did. What I liked from that game was the adjustments made. And you're right, his other playoff performance was far from spectacular. But what I like from Watson is that he just has like a high IQ. What I love about him this past season, which I don't know why more – they must have good press – in Houston, or I don't know who, maybe it's a national media member asking the question, but I kept seeing clips going viral on Twitter and on Facebook of Watson explaining what happened during the games and where what went right and what went wrong, where he like has this crazy memory. It's like, well, what happened is when the DB came around this way, I knew if I got the ball, you know, he just broke it down where you're like, damn, that's impressive. He's got like a photographic memory. That was like a random play in the third quarter, and he's telling you exactly where he screwed up or what went right. And I'm like, that's where Mitch is. Our quarterback is just so very like vague, and you don't get that sense of confidence in his abilities to read a defense that you do from Watson.
Yeah,
and that's why Watson was able to make those adjustments in the second half. Watson just feels like a winner to me. He won in college, you know. He just seems like a guy that even, you know, when he's off, you're like, okay, I could see what happened there at least.
Yeah, and he like with that. You know, breaking down plays and what coverages guys are showing him. It shows that not only has the knowledge, but he has the confidence in, hey, I don't care if I'm giving away secrets. I know I can make the plays. All I had to do on that one play when they're playing cover six is hit Hop. If I hit, I overthrew Hop on that one. If I hit him, it's six right there. Mitch, I don't know if this is a coaching thing, if PR is telling him, keep it vague, keep it robotic, keep it quarterback specific, and don't talk about actual plays. But he comes off very timid. He comes off very unsure of himself. Watson, with that explanation, it started off as the reporter just asking him why weren't we scoring more points. And then Watson pretty much turned it around on him and said, do you know what coverage they're playing? And saying, hey, the coverage is meant for us not to score a lot of points. And we have a certain amount of times where we got to hit these guys. And if we don't hit them, they won't work. So I like that type of talk. On Twitter this past week, football players were showing and talking about coverages and why teams were doing certain things. I just eat that stuff up as a consumer. I want to have my NFL players, a guy like Matt Bowen, who used to be on the Score, to talk about football in the way that they talk football and let us catch up to them, not dumb it down for us. And just like, you know, they talk about certain words like 12 personnel, 21 personnel. I got to go and search that out and see what that is instead of them saying, breaking it down for me specifically what it is or dumbing it down to the layman man's words. So, it's beautiful.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I eat that stuff up too, because I think football is the one sport that, I mean, I love and I feel like I'm very knowledgeable on it, mm-hmm. but I can admit it's the one sport I definitely could not be a head coach of, because it's just so complex.
Yeah. There's so many things, and the coaches are crazy. They're working for 18 hours a day and getting very little sleep, very little family time and such. So those are insane people. I would never be a coach.
Yeah, but like, you know, me and you pretty confident that we can manage a baseball team. I know I can definitely a better job coaching a basketball team than our guy Boylan right now. I don't even know why I said our guy. He is not our guy.
Yeah.
But hockey might be tough, but I feel even then I feel like I could put that suit on and let the boys know what to do. Football, I 100% know I could not coach it at a high level.
I couldn't even do it at high school.
From a fan's point. Yeah, I don't think I could either. So when I hear guys like Watson and other guys break down the game where you're like, oh, okay, cool. All right. I like what I'm hearing here, you know? And I remember maybe it was Lawrence. I think it was Lawrence Holmes. He like retweeted, did like a quote tweet of Watson, like in a post game press conference or interview, and then reminded his Twitter followers and Twitter in general that, wow, imagine not even interviewing this guy. Yeah. Pretty sure it was Lawrence Holmes, because when you hear Watson, I mean, it's not just you're impressed by his brilliance as a guy who knows the game. He's obviously incredibly talented too. But when you – it's – pace – typically, just to let everyone know listening, GMs, you should – even if you're like, no, I know who I want, you should interview everybody mm-hmm. or meet with everybody just to do your due diligence, because you never know. Someone might impress you where you're like, oh, damn, I didn't realize. Okay, wow. That's something that you don't, you know, now that I've met with him, I'm hearing a new side of him, or seeing a new side where I'm like, damn, okay, this guy might fit in with what we want to do. And I can see him adjusting to the league very well and kicking into another gear, like we saw in the Buffalo game. Buffalo's got an awesome defense. That's, you know, and Buffalo's, you know, I was rooting for Buffalo, to be honest with you, because mm-hmm. I know that's a city that's suffered, and it's, you know, they don't really have a whole lot else going on. No offense, Buffalo, it's cold as shit. You know, Niagara Falls is right there, but not really. And, you know, there's not a whole lot going on. So, I mean, it's a good hockey town, I guess, but the Sabres aren't really shit these days. I say that really not aware of what the Sabres are. Let me check real quick. Buffalo Sabres.
Probably good.
They're okay. They could fight for the eighth seed. They're within shouting distance of it, a few points off. But anyway, and, you know, that defense is what I kind of thought. I kind of go in and thinking that defense could probably give Watson fits. That's why I'm even more impressed and even more, like, banging my head off the wall thinking, what the hell, Pace? Now, we haven't podcasted in a while. Everybody had, you know, took Christmas off. Herb took a lot of, was doing a lot of shows on the Score. I was out of town and doing shows myself. We're going to try to commit better in now that 2020's here. The Bears, the only things they've done is they've fired a bunch of like assistants on the offensive side. The offensive line coach, special teams coach, probably one or two I'm missing.
Offensive coordinator and the tight ends coach.
Yes, that's true. The coordinator got fired. That's correct. and the tight ends coach. It's like, I don't know. Sometimes I think to myself, are there too many coaches? Maybe the tight ends need their own individual coach.
Exactly. They don't.
Why do they? They don't really. But every team has one. So that's not even like a knock on the Bears. So it definitely felt like you knew they had to do some sort of changes. The Bears were just this 8-8 team that we expected more from. And 8-8 in most years, I'd be like, ugh, it's the worst because you're in draft hell the next season. But we don't have a first pick anyway.
Exactly.
So I was kind of looking at it like, all right, whatever. Get the wins. Sure. But I don't have any – I don't have confidence in any of the three of our main three being your GM, your coach, and your quarterback going into next year. They've already said that Nagy's coming back, which I get. The guy won coach of the year last year. Typically, you give the guy another year or two. Mm-hmm. Fine. But to me, it seemed like, and we've talked about this throughout a lot of the season, that Nagy and Mitch were just not on the same page. And I've gone back and forth between who I think is more to blame, Mitch or Nagy. There, most of the year, I was thinking Mitch just isn't the guy. And then there's been some times where I'm like, well, Nagy definitely isn't putting Mitch in a position to succeed either, though.
I agree. And to go back to your point before this, talking about Pace and interviewing Deshaun Watson, even if you don't want the guy, firstly, you got to do your due diligence just so you, like you said, see the guy and maybe he'll change your mind. But secondly, you interview him for recognizance. You say, okay, I don't want this guy, but I know he's going to be in the NFL somewhere. So I got to get all the information from him, just like some mining, like, okay, this is what he likes to do. This is how he likes the quarterback. This is how he does this play on 3rd and 10. So when you play certain teams, if he gets drafted by the Texans, okay, I've already got this. This is what he says. This is what he likes to go to, blah, blah, blah. But as far as Mitch or Nagy, I blame the coach for not adjusting to what his players are. Yes. You are the offensive coordinator slash coach, head coach. So you need to know what you have. Yes, you didn't draft him, but you know, as the Kansas City Chiefs did their due diligence to interview Mitch Trubisky, who the offensive coordinator at the time was Matt Nagy. He interviewed Mitch also. So he knows his strengths, his weaknesses. And if he didn't before this year, shame on him, but he learned it game one. He knows Mitch. Oh man, he is overthrowing guys. He's not accurate. His footwork is sloppy. Okay. What does he do well? Gets out of the pocket and throws well. He can run with the ball. Let me tailor what my offense is to what he does. And he didn't do it enough. Like, you could see in glimpses of games, the Dallas game, other games he tried to do it, but it was always trying to move Mitch towards being a pocket passer instead of being the guy that Mitch is, and which he is a more of a outside the pocket runner with the ability to throw on the run and make plays. And make plays because the linebackers have to move up. That means a whole zone behind the linebackers is open, and he can just dump it right over their head. So Nagy not adjusting to what Mitch is my biggest problem.
Yeah, and I get that. I get that. Not that you laid that out pretty clear to me. But I meant, like, you know, earlier in the year. Now that I think about it, though, because if you look at the whole season instead of just week to week, it's clear that that Nagy did not tailor the offense to Mitch at all. And to add to your point about Pace not interviewing, you definitely – it's like this. You watch the show The Bachelor, Herb? Come on. You've seen an episode.
I know the premise, but I've never really seen an episode, really.
It's like Star Wars. Seinfeld, Melrose Place type of thing here where we get a lie detector test.
And I've never seen it in secret. I've never really seen Seinfeld either. I've seen one episode, the masturbating episode.
Well, that was a good one. If you're going to see one episode, it's a pretty good one to see. Anyway, on The Bachelor, so you got one dude and 25 mm-hmm. women. 25 mm-hmm. women are going for him.
Yep.
When he meets all, when he gets out of the limo on day one and sees all those women lined up, I'm sure in his brain he's thinking, yeah, number 7 of 25. That's where my head and dick are leaning towards. Yeah. You know? But he still has to talk to the other 24 because you never know. And that's how I view your job as a GM. You need to gather all the information. He didn't. So right there, that's a big failure on Ryan Pace's, because that quarterback class going into that draft, a lot of people said it was a weak one. And now it's looking like a pretty elite one. And the fact that we traded up for the worst one at number 2 is such a fireable offense to me. that it kind of irks me that there's no sense at all that Pace's job was even a little bit in jeopardy.
Yeah.
I never got the sense that he was in the hot seat, and that pisses me off.
And to further the analogy, it's like he did jump number seven's bones initially and said, hey, 24 other girls, get the hell out of here. And that girl has, you know, the herp. He's got the clap. She's fucking got a kid or two at home, and she's crazy as fuck. So, and all the rest of them are really qualified, have their own things, independent women who care about the environment and no STDs. So that's the analogy. And I made Mitch the ugly girl with the STDs. That's weird. And a bunch of kids at home.
I'm just thinking to myself, well, you know, that girl must have had some great boobs because what drew him, you know, dude, come on, man. You got to talk to these ladies.
And I'm trying to think, like, was Mitch the guy? Did Mitch have the good face, the pretty shape and all that good stuff coming out of college? Like, he played in the same conference as Deshaun Watson, and Deshaun Watson won that conference and then won the national championship. So I'm trying to figure out. And on the show today, Lawrence asked, is there some maybe prejudice going on with Ryan Pace? Like, I would rather Ryan Pace be prejudiced against black quarterbacks than him be dumb and choose Mitch Trubisky over the other two guys. So, yeah, if he's prejudiced, baby. I mean, that's perfect. At least that makes – I have a reason why he did that. Because if he's just dumb, he can't be my GM. Dumb doesn't go away. You can get out of being prejudiced. I mean, that, yeah. Some would say that's dumb also, but – also, his experiences guide his choices in the future. So if he experienced more black quarterbacks, maybe you'll see, okay, 4 out of 8 are now in the divisional round. And so maybe I need to go more towards that way or be open-minded towards that way without even shutting him out before I even start. Because that man's got a Corolla from his grandmother. Fuck that dumb stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting that Lawrence brings that up. I think he just, I'm not sure. Maybe he is prejudiced. I mean, obviously that exists in the game, but let me ask you this. Did the Bears send a scout to the Kaepernick workout?
I think they did. I think seven eventually made it to the rescheduled workouts. And I don't know if the Bears are part of that.
Okay. But I was just curious.
But I'm just saying, like,
add some evidence to the prejudice claim.
Yeah, I'm saying I wish he was. That'd be great because there would be a way. There'll be actual reason why he did the thing
Be funny. What would be funny in a way about that is, you know, in case there's some younger listeners who aren't aware of this, the stereotype had always been that black quarterbacks, you know, they move their feet too much or whatever. They don't stay in the pocket. They're more of a running quarterback.
Yeah, weren't smart enough to be at the cerebral quarterback position.
Sure. Yeah, that all fits into the equation. And then he drafts Mitch, who fits that profile to a T.
Yeah.
He doesn't stay in the pocket, you know, is really good on his feet. There's nothing about Mitch. Like, if you're a dumb racist, you know, coming up with your, you know, racist football team, Mitch does not fit that white country boy quarterback gunslinger prototype.
Not at all.
So I like that, you know, I know that you're hoping for prejudice, but unfortunately, I think he's just dumb.
And that's terrible because I don't think he's.
Yeah.
He's
certainly not racist because he's got black players on the team.
Yeah.
But he might have a prejudice towards the black quarterback or the stereotype of the black quarterback.
I just want him to be open-minded because, like you said, this is like the Bachelor. He got his girl and he stuck with that person. No matter what was said otherwise. And it was. And then I think if you've watched the video of them after drafting Mitch, it's like it was consensus with our coaches. It was consensus with our scouts. Like, I just think he made those people have a consensus. There's no way in hell that I don't know how many coaches, I don't know how many scouts, but probably tens of guys are thinking, oh, we want that guy who played at 1 year at North Carolina over the guy who played in the national championship 2 years in a row and won one of them. And then that guy with the great arm talent that maybe we can mold into something different. Then those team people need to be fired.
Definitely.
So then it's otherwise it's just groupthink that he's forcing his, his thoughts on them instead of them giving him an objective, hey, this guy's no good, or this guy is not as good as this guy. We need to look at him. You need guys in the room to tell you, as a GM, this is not the guy we should be choosing, or this guy is better than that guy, and here's why. You can't just have consensus. If you have consensus, you better look back at your board and think again.
Yeah, good call, good call. All right, last thing I'll add to it before we switch gears to some baseball. The Bears, I mean, maybe I'm going to give Pace a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he's come out and said Mitch is going to be their quarterback. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean Mitch is going to be the quarterback. Smart GMs will even lie to the press and say that because you never know. They still very well could go out there and try to trade for a QB. But if that trade falls through, you want your current quarterback to still have some confidence. So I'm okay. I'm okay with some of the fibbing that goes on with GMs. Like Cubs president Theo Epstein said a few weeks ago that he still believes in Albert Almora, and everybody was commenting going, was he a moron? I'm like, well, he's not going to come out and say the guy sucks. He's not going to come out and say, well, he's clearly trash and I made a mistake. No, he's going to say that, oh, I believe he could turn it around, because you never know when you might have to be like, yeah, we'll add him to the trade. And no, believe me, we think he's good.
But Theo, they're not saying that Albert Almora is a starting center fielder in this league. Theo's saying, true. I still believe in him, which is might be true. Ryan Pakes is saying that's our starting quarterback, and that man is all right. He's shown progressions throughout the years. I'm like, where? Like, what are we doing
that,
here?
That I don't see, but I don't see that. But I think I'm okay with the PR spin, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they better though actually look for a QB. I mean, there might be a couple out there worth trading for that will be definite upgrades. I would just hate to see them waste, because the defense is still to me an elite defense.
It is.
I mean, there were times where we were like, oh, come on, what's going on there? But a lot of it was wear and tear of playing way too much time on the field. I mean, the defense, a lot of times at the end of games, we burnt out because they were just on the field way more because our offense was three and out, three and out, three and out. You know, a healthy Hicks changes a lot of stuff. I like that extension we gave Jackson. I mean, the defense is still, to me, top five without any changes going into next year. That's how much I like the defense, mm-hmm. At least top 10. The offensive line needs some work, and of course the quarterback stuff. But you know, we'll keep an eye on it for you guys all season long. The playoffs of the Brady era could be over with in New England. I look at a guy like that, and it is funny. Like, you know, there's a lot of hate towards New England Patriots, and a lot of it's deserved. But to see New England fans getting mad, there was like, I mean, granted, these are two idiots on Twitter that don't represent anyone but themselves. But did you see that video of people trying to burn his jersey?
I did.
Like, how ungrateful are you? How many Super Bowls do you need to win for him at the age of 43 not to be that good anymore and you not to be over it?
It's just so, yeah, ungrateful fans. I mean, hopefully those were just ploy. The guys were just doing a ploy just to get some notoriety or something.
I'm sure that's what it was. But, and I took the bait.
I mean, seriously, if you're in New England or you're a Patriots fan, burning the Brady jersey, I mean, burning jerseys in general is dumb. I don't care if that person, you know, left your team. If he, you know, did something untoward, like a legality, like he hurt somebody, yeah, burn the jersey, whatever. But if he just leaves your team, plays a poor game, it's dumb. You bought the jersey. You're just burning your $100 away.
Donate it.
Yeah.
Just donate it, you know?
Yeah, there's a bunch of people at Goodwill will wear that Tom Brady jersey that you are going to burn, or Kaepernick in that case, too.
I'll wear it. I'll go wear either one of them. Give me both.
Yeah, and so, yeah, it's just dumb. I'm glad the Brady era is over and people talking about him coming to the Bears. If the Patriots don't want Tom Brady, and Bill Belichick, I believe, is the best coach / GM of all time, what would the Bears do with the guy that Bill Belichick says can't lead his team to a championship? That's what I say. Like, if Bill Belichick says, no, this guy's no good anymore, I usually tend to believe that. The guy that is the exception on that regard is Hicks, but he didn't say he was no good. He was a free agent, so they didn't sign him up again.
Yeah, that's different. And, yeah. And Belichick might have looked at that thinking, I could take this money and do something else with it because the other guy is not as good, but you know what I mean? Like one of those moves.
He made Shea McClellan a world champion.
Yeah, God, that guy was brutal with us too.
Yeah, so this, you know, when Bill Belichick says, I can do something with this guy, I believe it. And when he says, this guy's done, Lawyer Malloy, Ty Law, Richard Seymour, Albert Hainsworth, the list goes on and on and on. When he says he's done with a guy, usually that guy is done.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because Brady has always been with him, of course, and Belichick wasn't successful before Brady. You know, if you look at New England's record, I think the season before he took over, they were maybe below 500 with Bledsoe, and then Bledsoe got hurt. Brady Tom took over and was great. And then with Cleveland, he was awful. But I mean, everyone's awful with Cleveland. Well, not everyone, but.
But he was good that 1 year that. He was good that 1 year that Brady got hurt, but even though he didn't go to the playoffs that year, the 11-5 year where they went with Matt Castle. But still.
That's true.
They, you know, didn't go to the playoffs. But with Tom and the same ownership, the same coach, and the same quarterback have won 6 championships, and Brady's been to what, half of his career has been to the Super Bowl. It's pretty good.
Yeah, he was nine. I think he's 6 for 9 in the Super Bowls. Or yeah, did he? Has he lost 3 or lost 2?
I think he's lost 3. He's lost 2 to the Eagles, and then
no, 2 to the Giants, 1 Giants. To the Eagles.
Yeah, Giants and the one. There we go. Eagles.
So yeah, he's 6 for 9. Yeah, that's incredible. Half your seasons, almost half your seasons, go to the Super Bowl. I think he's going to be. I think years from now, he's going to have a regret like Jordan did, where it's like, dude, I when they won last year, when the Patriots won last year, I remember thinking he's going to retire. How could he not retire? You're 42 years old, retire, and you could be the guy who last 2 seasons wins Super Bowls. And then it makes me think of Jordan in 98. You ended on the shot.
Yeah.
Like the way Jordan ended his career with the Bulls was so perfect that if you wrote it as a script and gave it to Hollywood, they would be like, this is too perfect. It's too neat. You know what I mean? There needs to be more. Like, no one's career would actually end like that. It's unbelievable. They would tell you to rewrite the script. But it actually happened. So I think Brady's going to be one kicking himself one of these days where it's like, dude, why didn't I just end then? I got greedy. Why do you want to stick around for one more? I guess.
I mean, you see how it ended for Peyton Manning, how it ended for John Elway. Those ended on, even though Peyton Manning wasn't great in that game, He won a Super Bowl, and John Elway went out with 2. And it's like, deuces. All right, guys, I got mine. You guys know me as this guy. My last game, I won a championship. I'm out. Bye.
See, Brady had such an ego that he thought he could beat time. He even had that, like, show of Tom versus Time. I think it was Tom versus Time or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, dude, you're going to kick yourself for it later, Brady, but then you'll just go home on your you know, satin sheets and bang your supermodel wife and, you know, but feel fine.
But also maybe he's like, I gotta, like, once I go home, I'm already on, you know, under earning what my wife makes. Now I don't bring home any money. She's gonna be telling me to take the garbage out. She's gonna be doing all these stuff. Tom, what are you doing here? Get out of here and go mow the lawn or something like that. Like, hey man, damn, can I just get a relaxing Sunday off? Damn. So maybe he's thinking about that. Like, he wants to get out the house and do things so Giselle doesn't start bitching about things that he needs to do around the house because she runs things. Because I think she makes, like, her net worth's like $400 million, and he brings in, like, $100 million. She's like, get that shit out of here.
Yeah, she's loaded. She's loaded.
Petty-ass shit out of here. I'm Giselle.
I like how you've portrayed her like the wife in Modern Family. Although she's Colombian. Well, Giselle's Brazilian.
Brazilian.
Have you seen Modern Family?
I've seen an episode or two. Sofia Vergara, I think her name is.
Yes.
Whose husband is a Joe Magliano, whatever his name. He's a Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
Yeah. That dude, I walked past that guy once in L.A. He's a big guy. He's like 6'5".
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
He's a big dude.
I couldn't imagine. Yeah. You walked past him?
Yeah. I was at the Laugh Factory. I was on like the midnight show on a Friday night, and Dane Cook was on the 10 o'clock show, and I think he was there to see Dane Cook. I think they were like they met and were friends or something like that. Because Miley Cyrus was also there, and the one young Hemsworth, not Thor,
Krim, but like not Chris. So it's the one that people barely know.
Liam, is
Liam.
That his name?
That sounds right. That's the one
because Chris is Thor.
That's
right?
The one that went out with Miley. So yeah, Liam. That sounds right.
There we go. That sounds right. Yeah, because definitely because Miley.
Can
was
I
there.
Ask?
Right.
Can I ask you if you want to say it on this or not? Is Dane Cook actually funny?
You know, I liked his early, like his very first album. I thought it was really good. And then he got so big so quickly and he figured out like a niche of that college kids loving the, you know, he over enunciates every word and the act outs and everything like that. I don't have a bad word to say about him. He's a great live act. He was really nice to me. Every time I saw him, he was really nice and cool. I know a lot of people don't like him for various reasons, but he was good to me. So I you know, I'm not going to bash the guy or anything like that. And he really did kind of pave the way for comedians to use social media as a way to gain a following and to kind of go around the industry. Mm-hmm. Kevin Hart was on a podcast. There's a podcast called The Industry Standard. If you're into comedy, everyone, you should check that out. So this guy, Barry Katz, who was Dan Cook's manager, but was also a manager for Dave Chappelle at one point. He was a manager for a ton of big names. And he has a podcast. It's where he just interviews people for a good, it's kind of long, like 1.5, 2 hour interviews. And he does one with Kevin Hart, and Kevin Hart gave Dan Cook so much praise for paving the way with the MySpace thing. Cause Dan Cook was like, he was the first comedian to use social media to build a fan base. And he did it a lot through first AOL. But then when MySpace came into play, he really took over that. And Kevin Hart used that same, he tweaked it a little bit. He used a similar model of trying to get he like set up email lists. Kevin Hart, like, he told his agent, I want to do every club in the country. I don't care where it is. Just work me, work me, work me. And then he set up like a clipboard and get everyone's email, got them all. And then next time he was going to that town, he'd email everyone, hey, I'm going to come back, and they would sell out ad shows. So instead of doing like your typical Thursday through Sunday, he'd get there early and do a Wednesday. And then they were adding late shows on the Saturday and the Friday. And then the next time he came to town, it was, well, can't do that club anymore. I'm doing a theater. And then eventually he started doing arenas. And it's pretty amazing how Kevin Hart talks about that. So if you guys are into comedy, if you're into like kind of like inspirational shit, it's a good podcast for that. All right, let's shift gears. Your beloved White Sox have been having themselves one hell of an offseason. I mean, it's been impressive. They've really gone out and done all the things you kind of wanted them to do last year, in a sense. Spending the money wisely. We've already talked about the earlier moves of Grandal, and I think we last touched right before Keuchel was signed. And who else? Encarnacion. That was a big one, because I know that guy was on your list.
He was.
And he's one of those dudes like a Nelson Cruz, these professional DHs that you could get for a 1 year, $12 to $15 million deal, and they'll still hit you about 40 bombs.
Yeah, and Edwin is
both those
perfect.
Guys every year have been kind of doing that.
He's perfect for that. Like, that position you would think is easier for guys, but guys don't want to do that, especially when they've been fielding their whole life. It's kind of like acquired skill to be a designated hitter. You have to be cool with, you know, these are my four at bats, and that's how I'm going to contribute to the team. If I strike out all my four at bats, that's it. I can't make up for it. And I got to condition myself to know that one at bat's done. I'm done with that at bat. I need to move on to the next one because my team still needs me. And here's 35 home runs for the year. This is how I contribute to the team. No other way. No gloves, none of that stuff. So getting Edwin Encarnacion, one of the only him and Nelson Cruz, like actual professional DHs that you can count on every year. Him, maybe JD Martinez, but he has a glove still. So getting him was a priority since we couldn't get JD Martinez. Getting Dallas Keuchel was a priority because I knew they weren't going to go after the top guys in Cole Strasburg, even the Hyunjoo Ryu, which is another guy I wanted, but I think he was slightly over the margin. I think he made $20 million while Dallas Keuchel's making 18.5. So
he had four years, $80 million.
Yeah.
Which, so all these contracts, I keep looking at the 4 years, $90 million left on Yu Darvish, thinking that is actually going to turn out to be a steal.
Yes.
And that was the contract that because he had such a bad first season, so many Cubs fans and baseball fans in general were like, well, that contract is why you can't do anything else. And now it's looking like, well, that contract's actually going to save us money by the end of it, in a way. Anyway, I don't want to talk too much about the Cubs because there just really isn't much to talk about. There has been a trade scenario with them that's going around Twitter today. Touch on that in a few minutes. But with the White Sox, Louis Robert, which you're a big fan of. If they're ready, they're ready. Bring them up. Screw this service time bullshit.
Yes. But
which is cool of you because you're always your pro worker. I like that. I am under the rationale of, yeah, sure, bring them up as well. I don't think you have to do the move that they did with both Eloy and Robert because, with Robert, it's a little different because you got those two option years. So essentially, Robert is guaranteed. It's a 6-year, $50 million contract with the White Sox having the options on the seventh and eighth year at $20 million each. Now, basically, the 6-year, $50 million, if, you know, I did a lot of reading about this because I think a lot of the average fans don't really get how arbitration works per se. The 6-year, $50 million, you're almost betting that he's going to be close to Chris Bryant because mm-hmm. that's about what Chris Bryant's making for his 6 years, 50, maybe a little bit more because Bryant has the MVP and the Rookie of the Year. For comparison, Javier Baez, after his arbitration, like whatever the contract he gets for the 2020 season, he would have made only $20 million for his 6 seasons, which is a steal when you think about it. And that's kind of how that's why a lot of people think the new CBA is going to be completely restructured, because what Major League Baseball teams have been doing and getting away with to a degree, but you understand because there is risk, of course, is that they're getting the young years cheap as hell. So you could have a guy like Chris Bryant, when he won the MVP in 2016, he made less than $1 million that season. So you're thinking, okay, well, wow, what a steal for the team. But then later, when they're 30s, when they hit free agency, that's when they get overpaid. Like every free agent is typically overpaid because you're paying them off of what they did, and they're not always going to hit throughout the whole, you know, like the last year of the Keuchel deal, he might be a god-awful pitcher, but still worth it because you're not paying for the last year. You're paying for these couple years coming up, you know?
Yeah, it's the same thing with the Lester deal. Like, the Lester deal paid for itself in 2 years.
Definitely.
It's like now he might not be the pitcher that you signed, but he's given you much more than you signed for the World Series, the actual great pitching that he's pitched the first couple years of the deal. So, yeah, that's same thing with the Machado deal and the Harper deal. It's a 10-year deal. You get 5-6 good years out of that contract. You throw the rest of them in the garbage because you've made your money. Like if you do the $8 million is worth one win, those guys are going to reach that by the end of their careers of that $300 million, $330 for Harper. But, yeah, you throw all these extra years away if they give you majority good years during that. And that's why I know we're going back to the Cubs, the Yu Darvish deal. Like, if you guys seen him pitch at the end of last year, mercy. He was one of the best pitchers in the National League, and I think he's figured it out. I think he's got his swagger back. He knows that his stuff is elite and that the stuff that Houston was doing to him messed him up for a year and a half. And now he's like, F them people. I know they were cheating. Now I know they weren't. I wasn't showing my pitches. I wasn't giving a tell. They were just stealing my stuff because I know my stuff is elite. They can't hit it if they see it coming down the pipe. I'm striking out 11 per. So, 4 for 90, baby, let's eat.
Oh, yeah.
And so if we can do that with Keuchel, if he can get, 4 for 56, I'm not even expecting anything huge from him. I'm expecting him to be like Mark Burley was. That's exactly who I compared him to, and that's weirdly enough, he got the 56.
Is it 56? I thought it was. Oh yeah, 56. Yeah. It is 50. I think it's 56. But the
option, and he has an option. You can get an option to go to 72. So yeah, if he 2.5 of these years pitches like he has pitched in Houston and even the half a year in Atlanta, you're more than happy. He's not here to be the ace. He's here to be the 2 to 3. If he's your ace, you're in trouble.
And he's there for a veteran experience. This is a guy who's been to the playoffs and won a World Series with an asterisk.
Won a Cy Young too.
And I think, you know, his style could play very well in that ballpark if he keeps the ball down because he's a ground ball pitcher. Mm-hmm. So, and
60% ground ball rate last year.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's elite. So, Louis Robert, though, I remember 2 days before they announced the extension and he was going to be on the opening day roster, thinking to myself, all right, well, if they're going to do that thing where they keep him down for a week or two, that outfield looks really ugly defensively. Because, you know, Eloy's future is going to be as a DH. Everyone knows that. The right fielder you got from the Rangers is a butcher out there, too.
Nomar Mazara.
Thank you. I couldn't think of his name. And I remember thinking, all right, you need someone elite. And Louis Robert looks like an elite defensive center fielder. So that definitely jumps up your defense a notch right there. He's going to have to be covering a lot of ground. He's going to be like that dude Kelly from Bad News Bears out there. And that's okay because you don't want Eloy getting hurt. Eloy got hurt twice last year and missed, almost a month total of just jogging after fly balls and hurting himself somehow.
Yeah, and I think that it's my drillers would be having those guys, Eloy and Mazara, play as far back as they can with getting to the routine stuff in front of them and then play like as close to the lines as they can. So Robert would have to, get the stuff in the alleys. So you play pretty much, no doubles defense the whole time with the corner outfielders. And just make sure they catch the balls that are in the air. When Eloy or when Louis Robert, I've actually had got a correction. It was Robert. I've been saying Robert forever.
I thought it was Robert.
They say it's Robert. That's what Jason Benetti said. He asked him on his press conference and said it's Luis Robert. So that's weird.
They
anglicized his name.
Yeah, but I've been hearing nothing but Robert all like the last couple weeks. I guess I didn't get the update. I would rather say English Robert because it's easier to remember.
Much easier. And so I think that he's got all the stuff in center field and then right and left center field too. And let those other guys just get the corners and anything in front of them, anything behind them, and keep out of the way. When you're going into the alley, you hear anything, just peel off. If Luis is not there, cool, go and get the ball. But for most of the part, he'll be there covering your tracks and getting the ball because he is a five-tool player. And that one of that tools, I know when they put five-tool players on people, they usually are missing one, but he's a genuine one. He's got the hit for average. He's got the hit for power. He's got the speed. He's got the glove. And he is there. He's the guy. I forgot what the fifth tool is, but he's got that one too. Hit for power, hit for average, glove, throwing arm too.
Yes. I think you did the five, right?
And speed. Yeah, and speed. Oh, yeah. So
steal.
Yeah, he's got them all.
Could hit for average, power, could throw and catch. Yeah, those are the five. I watched like a YouTube compilation of him like a few days ago. And that dude looks legit. So the Sox are definitely, you give a guy 6 years, $50 million before he takes him to major league at bat. You must believe in him because, I almost think to myself, if they would have just brought him up anyway and let those 6 years play out, he would have had to have done very, very well, become super two and all that stuff to get around the $50 million he's going to be guaranteed anyway. So it's almost like a good faith thing, which I like that. I like teams believing in their talent. Why not? And then, again, those year seven and year 8 year options are going to be steals if he is the guy that they believe he's going to be that would have hit $50 million through arbitration. That's going to be definitely interesting. I mean, Sox fans listening, you're going to have some patience, though, because as good as these guys look, you can't expect all of these guys to hit immediately. It took Yoan Moncada a couple years. That last season was Yoan's breakout year where he looked like an elite player. Like, he finished, top 20 in war? Like, he had a big year. But, again, took him a couple years. I think he's age 25 now. Didn't look that great age 22, 23. 24 started showing. And then I think – or last year was the age 24 season. I don't know. Anyway, he's young. Tim Anderson took a little time. You got to give these guys a little bit of time. Now, you said before the Keuchel signing and before Encarnacion that you were hoping wild card. Do you still think wild card, or are you aiming for the division?
No. Division. I mean, I don't think they can – I think the wild card would be much harder to get than the division. I think the division is probably going to have to be 88 to 92 games. So – my thinking is Minnesota jumped up from like 79 wins in 2018 to 103 wins in 2019. There's going to be natural regression because I don't think they're 103 team win team. Firstly, and secondly, they lost two key players, CJ Krohn and Jonathan Scope, off that team. They both, ironically or weirdly enough, went to Detroit. And they haven't signed any players on their team that are of any significance. They re-signed Odorizzi to the qualifying offer, but they haven't as yet brought in Josh Donaldson, which they have a 4-year, $100 million deal waiting for him. A couple other teams do too. So I think Minnesota natural will have some regression. Cleveland selling off their players. And I think before spring training, they'll have Lindor off their team, maybe even Clevinger. So they're going to come back down to the pack. They were at, I think, 100 wins last year. So White Sox were at 72. I think naturally they were going to go to 75 just by the guys just growing up. Like you said, they're going to get better as they get into their primes. And now they've added so many wins with Yasmani Grandal with the bat and the glove, Luis Robert with the bat and the glove. The Mazzara is going to be playing league average right field. Last year we had under like a -3 or -4 right field, either out in the field and at the bat. One of the worst right field situations. And the same thing for designated hitter. Now we're getting one of the best designated hitters in the game. So we're going from -DH to +3 DH at Edwin Encarnacion. You're bringing in wins just from the guys you brought in. And the same thing with pitching. Instead of having Dylan Culvey take the mound every once in a while, or Odomir Despaigne, or Ivan Nova, who pitched decently last year. You got guys like Calico, Giovanni Gonzalez, Kopech, who'll be coming back, Rodon coming back in like August, guys who are much better than the guys you were throwing out there. So naturally, I think the White Sox, just with those guys, are going to be up to 85 and maybe can steal some extra games to get to the 88, 89, 90 win mark and have a battle with the Twins for the division.
And let me remind people, though, that what the 85 to 90 win range you're saying right now, that's on paper as the team's constructed right now. What's exciting mm-hmm. about that, I remember in 2015 when it was time for the Cubs, which is what the 2020 for the White Sox is what 2015 was for the Cubs. And mm-hmm. I predicted that year that the Cubs would win the second wild card. And when my friends were like, are you sure? Really? I don't think they're ready quite yet. I'm like, no, I think they're ready. And I said, I think I predicted between 85 and 90 wins. And when I said that, a lot of people said to me, well, I don't think that's going to get you the second wild card. I go, well, hold on. 85 to 90 wins will put you in place to make a move at the deadline. And that's what you got to look for, because the White Sox still have some nice pieces in the farm, I believe. So as you're mm-hmm. getting close by the All-Star break, if you're sniffing around that second wild card, you can make that move to acquire the talent to put you over the top, to lock it down, and to bring you into the early 90s, 92, 93 wins, to hopefully get you that wild card. And it is interesting now. I almost got into it. I gotta slow down with Twitter a little bit. I love, as a comedian, I'm on Twitter for comedy reasons, but I don't even like it for that, because comedy's boring on Twitter for me these days. I just think it's so much like, oh, did you hear so-and-so's joke? Was that too offensive? Or was that, it's just so much back and forth with that, whether it's offensive or not, or it's all so much fluff and bullshit and people, you know, preaching to their own choir. You know what I mean? But I like Twitter for sports, because you get breaking news, you get takes, you know, from some really good sources. But unfortunately, you have to deal with a lot of idiots. I heard a thing where they believe baseball is so much better now because of all the 100-win teams, as opposed to a couple years ago when there was only like one or 200-win teams. Mm-hmm. Listen, fans, there's going to be more 100-win teams every year, because everyone's doing the new thing of, if you're not going to be competing, you might as well blow it the hell up. So you're going to see a lot more 50-loss teams. You're going to see a lot more teams just completely tanking. Where it used to be, the tanking model has become more popular through the Cubs and Astros. And now other teams like the White Sox and San Diego Padres coming up. So you're going to see more of that like disparity between a division winner. Like you said, the AL Central had two teams with 100 wins. What, the Twins 103 and the Indians 100? And mm-hmm. then the Yankees won like 108. And the Astros won like 107 or 108. And the Dodgers won over 100. There was a lot of 100-win teams, because you also had a lot of teams that could give a shit about winning, like the Marlins and like the Detroit Tigers and like the Kansas City Royals. And like, you know what I mean? So I don't want anyone thinking that 2020 baseball is better than it was 5 years ago. I mean, obviously the players get more athletic, but as far as like league balance goes, no, it's just, there's more and more teams who are saying to themselves, well, we have no shot this year, so we're going to go young and sell off all of our assets, which it makes sense, but it also is going to make for a lot of bad baseball from certain parts of the country.
And let me correct myself. Minnesota won a 103, a 101, and Cleveland won less than that. They won 93. I must have mixed that up somehow.
Oh, okay.
28 games ahead of the White Sox, and the Cleveland Indians were 20 games ahead of the White Sox. But Houston won 107. Oakland won 97. The Yankees, 103. Just like you said, 106 for the Dodgers. A lot of teams.
Tampa?
A lot of wins.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot. And then there was some really
– Tampa 96, yeah.
And then there were some really, really bad teams out there too.
Yeah, 57 wins for the Marlins.
57, I mean, that's yeah, good lord.
54 for Baltimore, 47 for Detroit. This is bottom out teams, and there's teams that are just going for it. And then now the Yankees have reloaded. Houston's reloaded, even though they lost Cole. This is a winners or losers type of league. Either you're going for it or you're not. There's very little middle ground.
Yeah, and that's kind of becoming a trend in a few sports, I've noticed. Football, not as much, because football is pretty sweet because of the hard cap, in the sense that you could have quick turnarounds, where rebuilds in other sports are slower.
Yeah, I saw a stat today or yesterday saying that 7 of the 8 teams in the division round this year are different from last year. The only repeat offender is the Kansas City Chiefs. So we're going to have different people in the Super Bowl this year. And if the Kansas City doesn't win, there's no one in the conference championships that returned from last year. So this is changing. Football is a week-to-week, year-to-year league, which a team can go from last place to first place, like the Bears did in 2017 to 2018, and then go back down to third place the year after.
It always starts with that quarterback position, because I remember when the Seattle Seahawks, they had a really quick turnaround. They started Russell Wilson, drafted him, and then started him, and then they signed Lynch, and it was their big free agent pickup. So you got an elite running back and a quarterback that turned out to be elite, and then they made some moves on the defensive side too, but it was basically one offseason. You could go worst to first in football, and it happens every couple of years you hear about it, where in baseball and other sports, it happens, but it's very rare, especially nowadays with baseball because the analytics, every team has like a brain trust now of these, you know, Ivy League guys. So you really, it's getting harder and harder to, you know, really separate from the pack. So every team has to look for that new competitive advantage, which we now found out that Boston, which makes sense. It came out today, everyone, that the Red Sox, there's video evidence of them cheating too. Who was their manager when they won in 2018?
Alex Cora.
And who was he the bench coach the year before? Houston Astros.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you connect the dots. It's one of those follow the money situations where you're like, oh, no shit. How did we not see this? Yeah, but it's.
And with, weirdly enough, both of those teams, after they won the World Series, kind of sucked the next year. Like Houston, I don't even know if they made the playoffs in 2018.
No, the Astros.
Or they did, and they like sucked in the first round. They got out.
Well, I remember what it was exactly, because your new guy, Dallas Keuchel, going into the 2018 season, said, oh, no, we're going to get back to the World Series. We're not the Cubs.
Oh, yeah.
So he did Cubs, and then they ended up losing in 5 in the LCS, just like the Cubs did the following season. So both teams followed their World Series the same way. But the Astros, they lost a lot more. They weren't as impressive the 2018 season, where 2017, they had that feel where I remember going into that year thinking, I was surprised the Dodgers even went 7 with them. That was surprising, because I remember just thinking, watching that Astros team going into that playoff run, thinking, man, they are really got a lot of weapons. And then they got Verlander, who turned it around and is beating Father Time right now as we speak too. Although there's some stuff going on here with the way they grip the ball. We've talked about this too. That's going to come out eventually. There's no spin rate magically goes up. I believe a really good pitching coach could help you a little bit. But these guys' spin rates were going up. I mean, it was the difference between like a high school curveball to like a Hall of Famer's curveball. That's how insane the whole thing with
And not guys who are like coming into their own, like Garrett Cole. Garrett Cole, you could see, okay, he's gaining more spin rate. That could be natural as he gets older. Those guys like Charlie Morton, who are in their prime, and then we're at Pittsburgh and Atlanta, sucking, went to Houston, filthy, then carried it on to Tampa. What was it? Wade Miley, same thing. He was a journeyman pitcher, and he went to Houston, got some more spin rate. Same thing with Verlander, he was pitching well for the Detroit, but not pitching Cy Young like he pitched in 2019 with Detroit. And that's why people with this hindsight about why did the Cubs go and get Verlander instead of getting Quintana, because Verlander was about the same pitcher as Quintana at the time. And Quintana had controllable years and not as old as Verlander. So it was a good move at the time. And we'll find out. And Trevor Bauer's been on it for a long time. They've been doing something. I don't know if it's pine tar. I don't know what it is. They're getting more spin on the ball than any time before in their career. Or, in Verlander's case, recapturing in his youth.
Trevor Bauer had a funny tweet recently, too. Is it me, or is he kind of winning people over a little bit?
He is a weird, like, I've hated him for a long time.
Yeah, I didn't like him much at all either, but lately I'm kind of like, all right, this guy's not too bad, I guess.
But there's been some things he has said that I'm like, okay, I could see him doing this, and he's got a self-deprecating humor about himself now, which is much better than he was before. He was kind of a cocky dick where he thought all the stuff that he did was best than everybody. And then one time he told Avi Garcia to go sit down after he struck him out. I was like, I didn't like it because he showed him up instead of, you know, being cocky and like a bat flip and just saying, like, you know, yeah, I got to strike out. He's like telling the guy that, hey, go sit down.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
And so,
yeah, the bad flip isn't showing up the pitcher. I mean, pitchers, if you're sensitive. I mean, if a guy hits a home run and then he points at the pitcher and does like a cutthroat thing, yeah, that's a dick move. You know, nobody's saying do that. But yeah, the sit down thing, I'm chalking it up to maybe, again, I don't know enough about it, but I do remember not liking him for a while. And then I don't follow him on Twitter, but you know how like people you follow will follow the person or the tweet gets enough likes where it shows up, which sometimes is cool, but a lot of times I'm like, I don't like it. Like Rex Chapman is a great follow on Twitter. Get this.
Mm-hmm.
Get this. I wasn't following him. I only just started following him the other day. But I see all his tweets because everyone loves them. And I just assumed I was following him. And then I realized I wasn't. So then I'm like, oh, I gotta give the guy a follow. He gives me so much great tweets. And then but sometimes I don't like that about Twitter because people will like a bunch of shit where I'm like, I don't care. Why am I seeing this? I don't like this person. I don't like what they have to say and not to see it. But Bauer, I don't know. Sometimes you got to chalk it up to, he was probably a cocky ass. So what was he, 24, 25 when he was doing that shit? Mm-hmm. I was a dick at 24, 25. And I wasn't making millions. I can only imagine how much of an asshole I would have been if I was making. Well, I don't know about that. Actually, I'm a pretty good person in that sense of things. I was thinking about that.
You got a good foundation.
Yeah, I was reading about – I came across a quote about money recently that was interesting, where a lot of people talk about money being evil. And the quote was – or the whoever was saying it was basically saying that money isn't evil. All money does is amplify what you already are. So if you're an asshole and you get money, you're just going to be an asshole with money. And if you're generous while you're broke, when you get money, you'll just be a generous person with money, which means you'll probably be more generous. And I thought about it. I'm like, oh, that's a good point, because I've known people over the last handful of years that have come into money, and the ones who are already good are even better in a way, and the ones who are just kind of shitty have remained shitty. So it's, this was an interesting thing I thought. It's non-sports related, everybody, but take that home and chew on it. All right. I guess we could talk about the crazy trade that has been proposed. Yes.
I want to hear this. I haven't heard it.
Okay.
I want to hear it.
Here it is. So a week or two ago, I think it was Heyman and – which John Heyman could be here or there on some stuff. Yes. Or maybe it was Morosi. It was one of those two. Talked about how Nolan Arenado's name has been really picking up in trade rumors, and it sounds like the Rockies are more than happy to move him even, which is a little surprising because he only just signed that big extension, and he's been the face of the team for a long time. And I don't know what's going on in Denver, but – it sounds like, we'll move them. And, the Cardinals were mentioned, the Nationals, Dodgers, and then it said the Cubs. And then we're going like, that makes zero sense to me when I first heard that about 10 days ago. And then I already forgot about it because it sounded so dumb. Because I'm like, we're talking about trading Chris Bryant because of payroll, really. They want to pretend like, I mean, he's got 2 years left, and if he doesn't resign with them, I guess this would be the time to move him. But a lot of it is they're trying to get under the luxury tax for whatever reason. It's some cheapness, and then also to reset it. Now, if the Cubs are trying to get under so they could go all out for Mookie Betts next year, and they just look at how many holes they have this year, and they just don't think there's enough that they could do something, I think that's a weak excuse. But, okay, I could bite on that. Anyway, that's a whole lot to deal with the Cubs payroll thing. It's been really the story of the offseason, and a boring one at that at this point, because it's like, all right, they're not doing anything, and every day it's more news about nothing. But this was interesting. His name got brought up again, this time by some sources that people trust. Some good names have mentioned it. Rosenthal and what's the other dude that is really good?
John Paul Morosi or
Supon?
You're talking about the guy on ESPN with the ears, Jeff, I forgot his name,
Jeff,
but we'll
Passan
get to
it. Passan? What's his name?
Passan.
Yeah. He mentioned it too. Passan. So it came up in a couple where it's like, all right, these dudes are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that the Cubs would, the one I'm hearing right now is Wilson Contreras and Jason Hayward. because to Colorado, and maybe the Cubs would have to kick in another prospect, but not like an elite, elite one, but like a pretty good one for Arenado. And then the Cubs would trade Bryant in a separate deal to a team like the Braves or the Dodgers for some young talent that could be close to MLB ready. You know, there's rumors about the Braves. They got that Waters guy who looks like a stud center fielder in the making. They got a couple pitchers that could be ready as well. And with the savings, because the Cubs are actually net some money there, but not that much, maybe 13, 14 million on my math, they would sign or re-sign Nicholas Castellanos. Okay. So then your team would look like Castellanos in right, Ian Happ, I guess, right now in center, who did look a lot better the last couple months when they brought him up from Iowa, like a lot better. Like he had like a 2 war in, or 1.9 war in, what was it, 2 months he was up? I mean, that's pretty good. And then Schwarber in left, and then Arenado at third, Javi, Nico Horner, I'm guessing, at second, and or Bodie while Nico gets a little more seasoning. Rizzo, and then Victor Caratini at catcher, and then you go sign some veteran to a league minimum type of deal to be the backup. I don't know. That's intriguing to me. I still don't love the idea of losing Chris Bryant or Wilson Contreras because I love those dudes. And, you know, as a fan, I think it's okay still to be like, no, I want to hold on to those guys because those dudes were on the team that did the thing that I never thought would happen. Or I always thought it would happen, but people told me it never would. You know, I'm in my basement right now. It's all decked out with Cubs stuff. I'm looking at I got a Chris Bryant cardboard cutout. Wilson Contreras is in a picture I'm looking at right now on the wall, like a montage of game seven highlights. So yeah, I you know, for sentimental reasons, I don't want those guys to go. And they're both all-stars. They're both all-stars last year. But Nolan Arenado is very, very good. He's an elite defensive third baseman, better than Chris Bryant there. Offensively, I think I give the edge to Chris Bryant because you have to factor in Coors. Arenado was still good away from Coors. He still had like an 850 OPS, but obviously in Coors he's over 1,000. But you take him away, he's still really, really good ball player. Base running also, they're both very good. Chris is one of the best in the game now, so you give that edge to Chris Bryant. Arenado had the longer term deal. Here's where it's interesting for me though, because a lot of people are talking about, and sorry I'm going a little long-winded here, but this is interesting. A lot of people are talking about, does that really make the Cubs better in the short term? I mean, the long term, if you get the prospects, sure. But does that, and the getting the payroll down gives you financial flexibility going forward. But how does that help short term? The Cubs' big problem on the offensive side, because if you look, again, if you look at the individual stats, Chris Bryant hit a 900 OPS. Anthony Rizzo had an over 900 OPS. Wilson Contreras had close to a 900 OPS. Kyle Schwarber hit an 870 OPS and was like a 120 WCR plus. If you go, you know,
Castellanos has like 900
OPS. Castellanos was elite in his 2 months. Javier Baez, I didn't even mention Baez yet, was an elite offensive player for his position, had almost a 5 war, and that's including missing the last month of the season. The Cubs are like a band that doesn't, that individually, it's like a super group. You know how every now and then there's a band where it's like, this guy was the bassist for this band and the lead guitarist for this band. And then they form a super group, and then you're like, they're just okay. They were all better when they were in those other bands. You know what I mean? I mean, like, what's the expression? The whole greater than the sum of its parts?
Yes.
In reverse with the Cubs. Because everyone, I just named 6 everyday players of the 8 everyday players. The only two, like, hey, but even Hayward was better than he was. If you take away the experiment at leadoff, Hayward had a plus offensive season. I think he was like a 107, which means he's 7% above league average. And the only position that was god-awful was second base, where they just couldn't get any consistent production at all.
Out of Russell or Zobrist or
Yeah, Zobrist Bodie wasn't really around. And then Bodie had a bad defensive year. And then they had Robel Garcia for a stretch, who was like a 4A player. A nice story, though, because he was playing in Italy years ago. And then, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, Daniel Scalzo was just like saying his name makes me want to vomit. No offense, Daniel. I just think about how bad you were on offense. I'm sure you're a lovely human being. Yeah, the Zobrist thing. And just how the hell did he come back using his wife's song? Anyway, that's another podcast. I could do an hour about that crazy shit. So you look at that and then you think to yourself, but why were they feast or famine as an offense? Why would they have games where they scored 10 runs and games where they didn't hit at all? Some people might say, oh, well, they must have had 10 runs against bad pitching and zero runs against good pitching. Actually, the opposite. They would light up. I remember they beat DeGrom. They scored like 5 runs off DeGrom. They beat Thor. Giolito, who nobody in the league could hit. The Cubs beat the shit out of twice. You know, like, so yeah. They clearly could hit good pitching. Here's why. I'll break it down to everyone why the Cubs would get shut out a lot. Too many of the same style of hitter. Too many guys like Castellanos, Chris Bryant, Contreras, they all essentially have the same approach at the plate. And even Baez kind of does too, even though Baez strikes out more than the other three I just named. But for the most part, they're a team that strikes out way too much, not enough contact, and just not enough diversity. There's just the configuration of the lineup is not diverse enough. So when you run into a pitcher who's on, he's on against the whole lineup because the whole lineup has the same style. So when I look at replacing Chris Bryant with Nolan Arenado, I look at it like a lateral move, but in the right direction for what the Cubs offense needs. Nolan Arenado strikes out 14% of the time. Chris Bryant strikes out about 24% of the time. That's a difference. Yeah. That's a 10% difference.
Yeah, huge. And also, I was initially against this trade. I heard Nolan Arenado. I was like, oh, his splits, home run splits are really bad. But I looked last year, they're not that bad. I mean, I thought he was like fall off the table type of guy. But no, he's like an 866 OPS on the road. So that plays. And if he gets to Wrigley, now it doesn't play like, you know, Coors, but it does play when the wind is blowing out. And for a shorter porch, you know, you got to hit the ball really hard to get it out of Coors Field. And not really, but it's a huger field. Nolan Arenado would play. Losing Willie hurt. Losing Chris Bryant will hurt big time. But you need to replenish that minor league system with somebody. And if Chris Bryant's going to get you some good people coming back while you think that he's not going to re-sign with you, you got to do it. I like this trade. Now, the more I think about it and the more you've been explaining it, for the Cubs, you got to do something different.
Yeah, you have to. You know,
you can't, like, they've done absolutely nothing this offseason. And they, for reasons, because of the Chris Bryant arbitration things being held up, so they really can't, you know, know what they have if they have him for 1 or 2 years. I guarantee it's 2 years, but they need some certainty that it's going to be 2 years before they trade it to another team. And the other team who's acquiring Chris needs to know that too. I think acquiring Nolan Arenado and the contract, what is also interesting for the Cubs is cost certainty. I said that earlier with Jose Quintana, knowing that he has 4 years on his deal when they acquired him is a peace of mind that you can't buy. Yeah, it's a lot of money for Arenado, and I think $36 million at a point, but you know that is the point. That's the point of the contract. You have, okay, that's the number. We don't have to go over that. That's what our budget is. Though with Chris Bryant, even if you resign him, you don't know what the number is going to be. Same thing with Willie. You don't know what the number is going to be. Having Nolan on the team, you know that's the number. Now we need to work around all the rest of it. And getting Jason Hayward's albatross of a contract off of your books, too, is a thing. It will work out for your team a little bit better. Great guy. Brought you a World Series.
But, he is a great guy.
And but I do the think money is too much.
The money is definitely too much. And even if it's not in this deal, I keep thinking to myself, if the Cubs' whole thing is they want to get under $208 million, if you go by Sports Track, which I think people respect as a website, because I've seen people reference it when they do their, like, you know, budgets and stuff like that, or they try to figure out what a team's payroll is going to be. They have the Cubs at $211 million right now, so they only need to cut $3 million. So you don't need to trade Chris Bryant per se. And the rumor is that Theo's asking price for Chris Bryant, some people said, is absurd, like super high. And it should be super high because this is a dude that's an MVP and, you know, a face of a franchise, a guy that is, you know, obviously 2 years ago, he was banged up a little bit. Last year, he returned to all-star form, got a little hurt in the second half, wasn't quite the, you know, but still an elite player. I think he finished like 25th in war in all of baseball. So yeah, you should want a big return for him. That being said, if it's just about getting under $208 million, there's other ways you could get that off the books. Now, Jason Hayward is a $23 million, I don't want to say salary cap because it's not a salary cap, luxury tax hit.
Okay.
On the AAV, his annual, you know, because they do it by the annual average. Because, you know, there's some, every year, some guys will make like, you know, over the course of a big contract, it'll be like, we'll give him $30 million this year, but then $20 million this year, and then $50 million that, and then $10 million, you know, they do the back and forth. So baseball does it based on the average annual salary. That way they can't manipulate, which is like a bummer, because that'd be cool if you could manipulate. He is owed $23 million. It's a $23 million hit as well. You could trade him if you were willing to eat $17 to $18 million of that. I'm sure some, if you could convince a team, hey, if Jason Hayward was a free agent, would you sign him to $6 million a year annually? I bet you could get teams to bite on that.
Oh, every team in the major leagues would buy
especially Jason Hayward. A young team. I would try to sell him to a team like San Diego and say, hey, this guy was a godsend to us in 2016. He helps a young team. You guys are a young team without really a leader. You could use a corner outfielder. He still plays elite defense out there. His bat was better last year. He had 21 home runs. The OPS was around 800. Runs the bases still well. And again, he's that voice in the clubhouse. He gave a speech that rivals Martin Luther King's and JFK as far as significant importance, if you ask me. As
and
far
hell.
As historic importance.
Like, and hell, he's only 32. Remember that?
Yes, he's 30 years old. He's 30. I think he turned 30 at the end of last year. So this will be August. So he'll be 30 for most of this upcoming season. You know, and he takes care of himself. Again, this is a guy that if Jason Hayward was making even $16 million, which is maybe $17 million, which is an overpay for him, I would be like, no, I don't want to trade him because I think his voice is that important. You know, he's like, he's a leader. He's like, I think he's a great, he's every one of his teammates is like, I'll take a bullet for that guy. So I think you can sell him to a team like a San Diego to save some money. Or they might want to do a swap with what's his face. They got that guy that's Will Myers, I think.
Will Myers
is disappointed, but I think he only makes like $14
million. Yeah, he makes a lot of money, but he can't hit anymore. That's not good. And he thinks that best queso is in North Carolina, his hometown, North Carolina, while he plays his baseball in San Diego.
It's yeah, just I don't like want that.
Travesty.
Get out of here.
Exactly.
Real quick, Herb, you like to eat the middle slices of the pizza?
That's, I mean, the middle slices of the pizza are the best. I don't like, I didn't read the thing, the tweet all the way through. It said which piece you go for first.
Yeah, how do you get to the middle first, Herb? Come on.
You have to go to the outside. Well, but if I have a person with me, they go to the outside, I'm going to take the middle piece that's touching that outside piece that person just took. Because the middle pieces are the best pieces of a casual or a
tavern style
pizza.
I got to say this. I only agree if it's pepperoni. Because if you get the place that puts the pepperoni under the cheese, I like the middle piece for that. Otherwise, I do like the outside as well. Only if it's like the big. I don't like where that's you get gypped. You know, like where the pizza starts to make the circle, where it starts to curve.
Yeah.
I don't like those parts. I don't like corner pieces. I don't even like the semi-corner pieces. I like the big piece where you have the crust to hold. Or I like the big middle piece. I like the middle piece, but the big middle piece, you know?
The one that little table's on, one of those four.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, I if it's a extra large tavern style, I'll let my people eat around, and then once somebody eats one of those edges, I dig into the middle piece and like get like four or five of those pieces. So because I think most people like you are outside with a little crust. People, I don't mind. Like I eat the crust when I do have a outside piece, but my preference definitely is a middle piece, no crust, nice and cheesy. And I usually only get sausage. Now my girlfriend, she gets a lot of stuff on her pizza, so I get a lot of stuff on my pizza. Like she gets olives and green onions and other stuff on it. I forgot what else she gets on it. But I'll just roll with the punches. But usually I'm just a simple guy with just regular Italian sausage. And that middle piece, mwah, there's nothing better, I think.
That does sound nice. Now I'm hungry. Now I'm hungry, damn it, Herb. I think that's a good way to wrap up our first podcast of the new year, though.
Mm-hmm.
Follow Herb, everyone, on Twitter. That's where I saw that, because there's tweets going around where it's like, how do you eat your pizza? How do you do this? And you have to pick like a number. They put like a number if you're one of those people. That
so you would have been you corner. Would have been three or one?
I can't remember now.
I think four was actually the one what you're talking about, where it's the middle. It's the middle edge piece, where it's the biggest piece on the tavern style.
That's the one I like. Yeah, like the biggest piece on the tavern style, the middle, but the edge.
Yeah,
that's definitely my favorite. And then yours is my number two, middle right there. I like it all though. It's
and
all
I forgot you said pepperoni. Is that it? Your only topping you like?
No, or I like
sauce. A bunch of. Do you like your favorite topping thing would be what?
I like a cheese and sausage or a cheese and pepperoni. I mean, you can do a cheese, sausage, and pepperoni. That's a little bit much. I'm pretty basic. I'm kind of a basic bitch of, yeah, it is a meat lovers. I'm a basic bitch of eating pizza. I'm not really into green pepper or olives, or I don't really like, I like onions on some stuff, but for some reason, the onions on a pizza, I've never been a big fan of.
It doesn't work. No.
I've hit some bacon pizza where it's actually been pretty good here or there. Pineapple. I love pineapple, but not really on a pizza. What else? Anchovies. Go fuck yourself. yeah, I don't. I'm pretty basic with it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, if I'm going to get a pizza, it's either by myself, I'm going to get either Italian sausage, or I'm going to switch it up and get, it's a weird pizza. It's like a chicken Florentine pizza. So it's chicken, it's Alfredo sauce, it's cheese, and I'll get that one. So that one's a different. Yeah. Instead of the pizza sauce, it's Alfredo sauce. It's a little more healthy. I mean, not healthy. It's like you feel like you got the gout after you eat it, but it's delicious. Yeah,
I was going to say. Yeah. I'll knock you on your ass. I'll do, what else was I going to do? I'll you know what I've been doing lately, actually? This is what I meant to say. I'll add jardinera to it.
Oh, delicious.
Yeah, don't throw that out as a topic. I've only been doing that the last couple of years. I have friends who are like, how have you only discovered that now? And I got to remind everyone, sometimes it's nice to discover something late in life because it's new to you. And while everyone else has already undervalued it or they don't appreciate it anymore, you're still loving it every day.
Exactly. I was wondering, when you went out to California, did they know about jardinera?
No. They did not know about it.
That's weird. Gee, because I went to a Subway in San Diego and I was like, yeah, give me some, you know, you're getting your toppings and you're looking for the jardinera. You're like, what the hell is the jardinera? And I asked him, like, you got jardinera? He's like, what the hell is that? I was like, oh, gosh, damn, Chicago coming out of me. So I was like, banana peppers. Fuck it. Californians, dummies. But yeah, they don't have jardinera out there unless you go to a specialty Chicago place.
Yeah, there was a that actor, Tony Montana had a place that had it.
Mm-hmm.
He had a place in Burbank, California. But yeah, I think that's one of those things where the Italian food in general wasn't very good in California. And it almost makes me think maybe that Italian like immigrants just didn't get far enough out that way.
Yeah.
They didn't go far enough west. And then later in life when chain restaurants became a thing, they got like Olive Garden and crappy chain restaurants out to the West Coast and it just never got good. I don't know. I think, well, Vegas has some good Italian food. I got to imagine because Vegas just has great restaurants. But yeah, LA, I never really had very good Italian food in LA. LA and San Diego, great Mexican food.
Yes.
Wonderful, like sushi, Japanese, Chinese food.
Mm-hmm.
Great burgers, fantastic burger spots. But as far as Italian food and pizza in particular.
Oh my goodness. I didn't know. Like it's so easy, guys. Cheese, dough, and sauce.
People think it's the water.
Ah, okay. That
the water is the water not is, as good quality.
The water is pretty bad because I had the tap water out there. And I was telling Courtney last night, we're watching a movie, I think Marriage Story. It was the movie with Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. It just got nominated for a couple Golden Globes.
I have not watched it yet. I've been, you know, a lot of people have been talking about it. I don't know if I want to see it, to be honest with you.
It's good, but it's very heavy. So they that's move why. Up.
I'm happily married. I don't want to watch shit like
oh
that.
My
you
God,
know,
it's terrible. No, yeah, if you're married, I'd probably go against it. But they're
and not even good looking Scarlett. You
no,
don't even have
no.
a good looking Scarlett.
Short hair and kind of beat down.
Come on. That's a waste of Scarlett Johansson.
And
I know I'm being a meathead right now.
Get some water out of the tap. And I remember me living out there, I was like, no, this water is terrible. Don't drink. And even the water looked cloudy. I was like, no, that's the water I had. You had to boil it, and you really couldn't use it a lot. It's not Chicago water where you just drink it straight out of the tap, and you know it's delicious. It tasted like metallic-y or disgusting. Like I don't know, like it had stuff in it. So, yeah, maybe it is the water out in California.
It definitely is. First time I ever had a Brita water filter was in California.
Okay.
Because you didn't need one. Lake Michigan, everyone, is the freshest delicious. Water like on the planet, I believe. It's very, very good stuff.
I mean, you drink it right out of the tap. I mean, that's what
your
mom did all the time. Your mom said, hey, drink it out of the tap.
Out of the hose, even.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Coming out and play and you don't want to go back in the house? That hose was delicious.
If you knew a kid growing up who was too good for hose water, he was out of the group. You'd hang out with that kid.
Fucking cake eater.
Yeah, damn straight. All right, that's been the podcast, everyone. Apologies to Bulls and Blackhawks fans that we did not get to you.
Got to earn time.
You got to earn time, and it was the first podcast back, and we had to cover some football because the playoffs are going on right now, and just had to recap the season that was for the Bears, and the White Sox are dominating right now, so you got to talk about them. But also, everyone, you got to check out Herb's White Sox podcast, Locked On White Sox. Where can they find it, Herb?
Any platform you do your podcasts.
So perfect.
Spotify, you go on your Apple, Google Play, all those. You Stitcher. And then go to Locked On Sox on Twitter. You can follow me there, too.
Perfect. And you guys can follow me at Joe Kilgallen on everything. And you can please write us a review on iTunes or whatever. Give it the 5-star rating. It goes a long way. Let your friends know. Be more consistent coming back here in 2020. Also, if you guys like stand-up comedy, check out my YouTube channel. I am recording, or should I say filming, another one, Herb. I know people are saying to me, again already? Well, I did film. You were at the filming of the last one. That was February 8th of 2019. We're doing this one Wednesday, January 29th of 2020. So a little less than a year, but I've got a new hour, and I'm itching. I'm in a mode where I'm like, let's keep putting this content out there. And I'm excited about this one, too. I think it's just as good as the last hour, if not better at parts. And definitely looking forward to that. That'll be at Timothy O'Toole's on Wednesday, January 29th. I will tweet out, like, the ticket links this week. So just, you know, Joe Kilgallen on Twitter. If you guys want to come on out, that'd be awesome. Because it's going to be quite the party.
That's great to hear. I've been at, I think, both of your
You got to keep it going.
I'm definitely going to
be the third.
And now be there. On weekdays, I have those nights available. The 29th of January will be my spot right there down the street, Timothy O'Toole's.
Hell yeah, baby.
Fairbanks.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to 773 Sports. Later.